Welcome to Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and in each episode, my special guest and I will talk about local events, the topic of access in Cleveland, and sometimes we'll just talk about some cool people who are doing cool things in the greater Cleveland area. I'll introduce you to this week's guest right after this. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Black Girl in CLE podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and today we are talking about mental health. And with me is Robin Hill, mental health therapist and owner of RC Hill Counseling and Professional Development Services. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thank you.
So I've been told May is Mental Health Month. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have a discussion because I know there's so much stigma around Black people, Black women, and mental health. Mm-hmm. Have you seen anything like that, or is it getting better?
In my opinion, it's getting better. You know, we've always talked about the stigma that has its historical roots. It's not like we just are superstitious people, but there was a time where mental health services were not kind to us. So because of that historical context of, you know, punitively using mental health services, like if you were not behaving as a slave or behaving as a sharecropper, you could be thrown into a psych ward. Because of those reasons is why we pass down this mantra of keep our problems to ourselves. We solve our own problems, we don't go out. But and as of late, we are, a lot of us Black therapists are getting out there and pushing it. We have our own organization here in Cleveland, Professional Black Christian Therapist Network. Then there's Black Therapist Rocks. There's all kinds of networks that are out there to promote mental health and giving us an opportunity to talk and say that we have the freedom to talk about how we feel.
Great. So let me ask you this question first, and then I'll probably ask you again in the show just for anyone listening, because I know there's some people that are listening to the show saying, I'm looking for a counselor or I want to start. What would you suggest to start that process for people that are like, I need to speak to somebody?
I would say if you know someone who could make a referral, ask for that. You can also Google. If you Google therapist in your zip code, you will most likely pull up a directory full of therapists. I myself am on a directory. I'm not going to advertise them, but I'm on a directory. And there are several depending on the area. And you can find people who are treating specific areas that you are looking for. So if you need help with depression or marital issues or whatever, you put that in your Google search and you will find therapists in your area that work on those issues.
Okay. And I want to put out, many therapists take insurance. So when I first started looking for a mm-hmm. therapist, I went straight to my insurance portal to see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that there is a benefit, or it doesn't matter, in finding like a female having a female therapist or a Black person looking for a Black therapist or whatever
that is? I think cultural sensitivity is very important. I particularly built a practice where I have majority African-American women because of people looking for someone that can understand where they're coming from. So I think cultural sensitivity is important. I don't think that it limits any therapist skill set, like they're just unqualified, but it does help when you understand Black family dynamics or women issues to address that when you're working with a client. I've had clients who saw therapists who are of other cultures, and some of the advice that was given was like not so, I'm like, oh my gosh, I would never say that to a Black mother. Why would you direct your client to go do that? Because they don't understand the family dynamic, and there are other ways to address issues without disrespecting the culture.
Okay, great. I know that there are different dynamics. I've spoke with someone once and they were saying that they had multiple therapists. They were a small mm-hmm. business owner doing a lot of stuff. And so they had someone specifically to work on that. Mm-hmm. And then someone that would specifically work on like relationships or something personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that advisable? Do people have multiple therapists?
It's very iffy. You really shouldn't have as a person multiple therapists. I've had a client where she picked up another therapist to help with her weight loss goals, but it seemed like she was still working through the trauma with that therapist. So I said, well, why don't you work with her? And, you know, do that work. And because you don't want to have, especially when dealing with insurance, you don't want to be double billing for the same thing. In the long run, you might wind up having to reimburse the insurance company if they feel like it was a duplication of services. So it's not always a good idea to have multiple therapists, but when it's a specific thing, like I'm working with a particular person's trauma, but they also want to get marital counseling, they may go find a marital therapist to work through their marital issues separate from the individual counseling.
Let's just, you know, just kind of doing brief stuff and we'll circle back. What about families and kids? Mm-hmm. You know, I know that sometimes that family dynamic, we've been taught to keep the family stuff inside the family. You know, mm-hmm. Are you seeing a rise in, you know, Black kids going to therapy or families going to therapy?
Definitely. Actually, and it's a big surprise because, like you said, we have this stigma, but then I have a lot of moms that say, hey, I need to work out. My family's a mess. We need some help. There's also a lot of school-based therapy programs that are starting to get the children at a younger age. So the way they do that is they work with the schools. They're in the schools. And they get the referrals from the schools and they connect with the parents through the referral. And that's how they get a lot of the families, is because once they start working with the child, the family issues may come out and then they start working with the family as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So May is mental health awareness. And I've been told once, and this was before I started seeing a counselor or anything, you go to a therapist to prepare you for the bad times. You don't necessarily wait for the bad time. What do you think about that statement? Do you agree? Or should I wait till like I'm in crisis mode almost to say, ooh, I should probably see someone.
Right. I think whenever you feel ready to go see someone, it's a good idea. So some people want to get ahead of a problem. They want to just have some place to talk. And then I do have a lot of people that come in crisis mode. And so it's basically where their comfort zone is. It takes some people to get to a point of crisis to want to even open up. It doesn't mean that there wasn't a problem there beforehand. It doesn't mean that they didn't need to talk. But a lot of people are closed off and guarded, and they wait until the fire is blazing before they make that call. And that's okay. Come on in. We'll work through it. I've had people there. They're talking in circles and telling the stories. And they're apologizing. And it's because the fires are high. Everything's burning down. And I say, it's okay. I can follow. I'll follow. And then over the weeks, stories start to make more sense. They get a little more organized and they're a little more calm. But it's okay. Whenever you feel comfortable, if you want to talk before the fire, come on in.
Great. So I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's kind of talk about this current coronavirus crisis, because I'm sure that that's probably impacting some people, and just continue the conversation. So we'll be right back. Hey, everyone. We'll get you right back to your show. But I wanted to make sure you check out all the other shows at Black Girl Media. Whether listening to The H or Truth About Child Loss, Under the Wig, or 216 Jams, our podcasts cover all types of topics and are for a variety of lifestyles. So check us out. Also, if you have a show idea and you're ready to get your podcast distributed on Google, Apple, or Spotify, we can get you started. Just head over to blackgirl.media. That's www.blackgirl.media. Welcome back. I am with Robin Hill, mental health therapist and owner of RC Hill Counseling and Professional Development Services. And we are talking about mental health today for Mental Health May. And again, thank you for being on the show. Let's talk about this current coronavirus quarantine, lockdown, stay at home order. Could there be people that were like, I've been great, but now start realizing they might need some support?
Yeah, definitely. We are all going through what they call a collective trauma. So this is a difficult time for us all. And whereas most people have just been going through life and not dealing with certain issues, now they're sitting in the house and a lot of those issues are coming up. And that is natural because now your brain has time to process a lot of stuff that we're pushing to the background. So now it may be time to say, okay, I never grieved my grandmother 5 years ago. And it's really bothering me and I need to go talk to someone. Also, just the idea of being in the midst of a pandemic is freaking everybody out. I mean, my clients' anxieties are through the roof. And part of my counseling is just, how are you doing right now? Are you okay in the house? Are you able to get things done? And just talking to them about how they're functioning in the midst of a pandemic. So it's a lot going on. I've had families all ready to kill each other because they're sick of each other. They're all in the house. And I've had to, you know, order them to separate and just give each other room, you know. So it's just a tough time.
Is there a way to start therapy now? I mean, if I didn't have a doctor already, are there still, like, I can't go to an office.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Most therapists like myself will have an online consent form. The way I do it is I email that to the client. Once they sign that, send it back with copies of their ID and insurance, scan it all back, send it to my office, and then we will get you set up for online therapy. So I use different platforms. Actually, the one telehealth platform that I was using was having a lot of difficulties because all of us therapists were trying to be on at the same time. So I have had to use Zoom, which, you know, the governor has made provisions for that in the Ohio Revised Code. So, yeah, I've had to use other methods because we all are online pretty much right now.
Okay. So I think starting forward, I just kind of want to talk about some of the unpacking of kind of the mindset. So I will often support people and talk about mental health and talk about my own mental health issues. And some of the pushback that you hear is just kind of amazing on why people don't get mental health. I mean, I think there's still some of that ingrained in us.
Yeah.
And so if you don't mind, like, I'd love to unpack or run some of these things by you that I've been hearing from people.
Okay.
So one of my favorites that someone told me once was, like, I said, oh, well, you know, I see a counselor, it really helps me. And they said, well, you know, I'm going to just let you go and tell me all about it. And then, like, then they'll get counseling because if I come back and say, hey, my therapist said, you know, I should, I don't know, mop the floor to feel better, then they'll go mop their floor. But is there one size fits all?
No, it's not. And what works for you will not necessarily work for somebody else, for one. Two, there's always the threat of somebody sabotaging your own therapy. I don't recommend you go and tell people necessarily what you talked about in therapy because everyone's bias will come out. Oh, I don't know about that and whatever their issue is. And now all of a sudden, now you're questioning what was working before you talked to that person. So no, it's not a one size fits all. Everyone's personality is different. So what they need will be different.
So you hit on something I want to expand on, the pushback or the, for lack of a better way to say it, everybody knowing what to do for you. You know, the girl, what you need to do is that kind of culture.
Right.
Like, what do you think about that? Like, I think that's very unhelpful just in general.
Because I think people different. I think they have their best interest at heart, or maybe they don't. You know, I might be making a big assumption, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they know what they're talking about. A lot of people are driven by their own desires and motives. So if you're telling people, if you're saying, you know, I think I need to create some boundaries and, So yeah, I see this a lot when, especially when it comes to spirituality, I need to create some boundaries. I need to work through some issues with my mom. And then you got someone saying, well, no, you just need to give it to God. You just need to pray about it, give it to God and move on. You just walk in your deliverance and just, and so now you're getting the pushback. And it's basically a lot of times when you're getting such a pushback, it's triggering that other person on the stuff they don't want to deal with. So now here you're getting advice from pain as opposed to advice coming from a productive place.
Okay. I also think that some people are just the lack of understanding, like our lives may be different. So if I tell you my life as an entrepreneur and you are, you know, I don't know, a 9-to-5 factory worker, I don't know.
Yeah.
We have different outlooks. So the things that I encounter, the things that they encounter.
Yeah. Aren't the same. It's not the same. It's not the same. And a lot of people will, like I'm an entrepreneur too. So I get that. So when people come in my office, it's like, okay, the mental health had to go on, but then the coach will come on like, all right, so now you need to do these things in order to stay afloat. You got to eat. But I've had many people say, well, why don't you just drop your practice down at part-time and go get a job somewhere else? And yeah, because they're 9-to-5ers. They don't know anything about, they don't say, why don't you go out and market? Why don't you go out and get this or create a website, you know, get your website redid. No, why don't you drop the part-time and go get a job? And it's like, I spent all these years building this. Why would I do that?
So I'm trying not to like laugh because I want to let you say everything you say. Like this is a whole another conversation for the entrepreneur podcast because I know someone that they went to help to get some help. They're an entrepreneur that had a great company. They fell on hard times, which we all do. Mm-hmm. And they went to a local agency that helps entrepreneurs. And the person basically said the same thing. You just should get you a job for a while.
Yeah.
And that person was crushed.
Yeah.
And they were someone that probably, and I'm just guessing, like I'm not a mental health professional. They were already getting close to crisis because they had a lot of other stuff going on in their lives. And it really just crushed their spirit.
Right. Right. And that surprises me coming from an entrepreneurial agency, like rather than connecting them with resources to help them come out of where they were at. That surprises me. But yeah, people advise based on their own short-sightedness, and you have to be aware of that. And it's not always best to, I mean, you can, my old pastor used to have this saying about putting stuff on the shelf. You can get a word from somebody, somebody can tell you something, but put it on the shelf and see what happens with it. You don't have to take it in and consume it right away.
Can we also talk about, kind of in the same lane, about even taking it in? Because I think that for some people that can be very triggering in itself, like you kind of mentioned. So I am notorious, and people in my circle know that I am notorious for avoiding situations or not even speaking to people that I know are going to give me some other thought process that's going to take me off the course.
Right.
So like you said, don't tell them about therapy or the entrepreneur piece or what have you. You know, do you have any advice for, especially us women, who often use our girlfriends as counselors?
Yeah. Like it's the same thing, you know, but you have to evaluate who your girlfriends are. You know, you may have a rowdy bunch of girlfriends. They're not the girlfriends that you talk to about business. I think that when it really comes to business and you know, major life decisions, you might want to have people you consider a mentor that you go to for those things. I'm a very private person though, so I'm going to say that because it's probably coming from my bias as well. But I've seen just negative influences and the impact it has. I do not tell everybody, I don't show what's in my hand. Right. Even people who I might even respect professionally, I've learned to not show what's in my hand because people can be very driven by their own motives. And therefore your advice will be tainted. It's not necessarily the best for you. It's what's best for how they may get something out of it.
So back to the, like the misinformation of the advice, the myth, that was something that I remember someone at once saying is that my girlfriends are my therapist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I heard someone say that's not fair to the girlfriend. Like,
yeah,
that's not fair. But on the other hand, you know, for me to talk, let's say talk guys and dating, I can't talk about getting married possibly to a bunch of single girls. It seems like I shouldn't be able to talk about getting married to a bunch of single girls. Mm-hmm. And so that idea, it's kind of a mismatch to me of that kind of counseling.
I think it's the misconception of what counseling is. Your girlfriends are your therapists. Your girlfriends are the people you talk to, you bounce stuff off of, you may vent to, but that's not necessarily a therapist. A therapist is going to use therapeutic tools to help you heal and get past something. So I encourage my clients to expand their social supports because I can't be there every day. I cannot be your bestie. I can only be your therapist. But you do need social supports to help you talk some things out. Sometimes you may be thinking things in your head that really is crazy. And the moment you say it out loud, I think I had a client years ago who had said she was about to kill her husband. She had thought it out, planned it out. It was going to happen. Yeah. And she said, when she went to her best friend's house, her friend said, are you crazy? And it's just the hearing it out loud made her come to her senses. But whatever he did, I don't remember what he did, but he was about to get it that day. But sometimes you do need your social supports to give you that, to be your sounding board, to sometimes be your voice of reason. But when it comes to therapeutic, when it comes to healing from a pain, a trauma, and you're having psychological side effects, or you're not functioning well in your daily jobs, or you're not taking care of home, you need something additional. And that's where a therapist comes in. We're not your girlfriends, though it sometimes can feel that way. It can feel very like a good connection, but it is very therapeutic in nature.
So talk to me about the trauma piece. You know, day to day, I've said, like, as Black women, we've gone through a lot of stuff, and we've encountered trauma, like this current coronavirus crisis doesn't feel like trauma because we're just going day to day, watching Netflix, social media. Like, what is trauma, or how do people know? Like, we've been through a lot of experiences.
Yeah.
And trauma, you wouldn't know it's trauma.
It's very complex, but the way I usually break it down to clients, especially when I'm working with young people, is that it's an event that splits time. So there was before this happened, and then it was after it happened. It's something that marks your timeline. You won't forget it. So that's how I let people know that there's been a trauma.
Okay. So it could be something like a bad breakup or something.
Yeah, it depends on, I mean, if it's really bad. Like, sometimes I would probably classify breakup in a sense of grief or loss. A lot of times we don't realize we have to grieve those relationships like we grieve other people passing. We have to deal with that loss. But a trauma is, it's very traumatic, it's serious, and it creates physiological effects to you. You have the anxiety, you have the re-experiencing of the event, you have the hypervigilance, you have a change, persistent change of mood and thoughts because of what happened. So yeah, it's pretty severe. Can a breakup be a trauma? Yes, especially if the relationship in itself was traumatic. It can be.
You mentioned anxiety, and I know that in current culture, we throw those words around like, girl, I'm feeling, my anxiety is, or I'm so depressed. Could you give some clear cut or clarify some of those definitions so that, you know?
Anxiety is like a persistent sense of worry or a feeling of doom, constant thoughts racing. I often tell people in layman's terms, do you feel like your mind is going like a hamster wheel? You can't stop it. Because sometimes people aren't worrying about bad stuff per se, but they're just worrying about everyday stuff, thinking about the laundry and everything they have to do, and they can't turn their brains off. They're not able to sleep. Either they can't fall asleep or stay asleep. You can be breathing heavy. You can have physiological effects like heavy breathing, panic attacks, heart pounding, racing, sweating, shaking. But for the mildest of the symptoms, it's just your mind is going a mile a minute and you can't stop it. That's one of the first signs that, okay, you're dealing with anxiety. Feeling overwhelmed can be anxiety or depression. Depression is usually marked with sadness or just numbness too. Sometimes when we're not in tune with our feelings, we don't cry, but we just have this lack of motivation, can't really get up, can't do anything. Numbness going on. So in layman's terms, you want to look out for things that interrupt your ability to do your daily functioning. Are you able to get up, shower, dress, clean your house, go to work, take care of your family? If those things are being interrupted, then it's chances are you're dealing with either anxiety, depression, or trauma.
You mentioned that with depression, it's sometimes sadness. And I know a lot of people just be happy.
Yeah.
What's the misstep or the miscommunication there? Because, you know, feeling sad is okay. You have sad times, but it's not depression. Or where's that at?
Depression is when you can't control it. You cannot snap out of it. You know, we all have our down moments. And I think that we do become dismissive when we think, oh, yeah, I was sad, you know, when my grandma passed. And I was, you know, I couldn't stop crying. But that's, it passes. But with people who suffer from depression, it won't pass. They can't shake it. And they need to work through how they got there. Sometimes it's chemical. A lot of times you might see a chemical imbalance. You see something runs in the family. And so therefore it has to be addressed chemically. A lot of times it might be because of a specific event, like parents divorced when you were a child or something. So you have to work through a lot of those painful conversations. And my approach sometimes is both. It can be chemical as well as something that needs to be talked through. I always let people know, as far as medicine, when you cannot function and your safety becomes an issue, I will strongly recommend medication. A lot of people are like, I don't want to do medicine, I don't want to talk to it, but you're not functioning well. And the conversation isn't even helping you at all because you're just in such a low place. So you might want to consider some medication to pull you out so we can talk more. And then you can look at weaning off of medicine later if that's what you decide.
Is therapy like short-term? Like, do people exit therapy? We have people that have therapists for like 30 years. Mm-hmm. Should you be able to exit like, hey, like you graduated or?
Yeah. Yeah. With a lot of my clients, I will start to reduce their frequency and then wean them off because some people just don't want to go. I got some clients that are like, No, they'll probably never go. But I'll put them on what I call PRN. So as needed, if something happens, you can give me a call. But I do try to reduce it down so they do not become dependent on the relationship. And then some people do just come in with something really short and they're done real fast. I would say, though, there are those who did not come in to talk about what's really wrong. And therefore, the therapy ends quickly because they never deal with the real issue.
So is that the person, should the person be more giving of that information, or is it more of your job to pull that from them, just out of, for the curiosity or for how people come into therapy?
Well, we do an assessment. Most of us all do an assessment. We ask all kinds of family history and social history. If they don't share it, we're not mind readers.
Okay.
So I can tell sometimes that there is something deeper, but they want to keep coming in and talking about cereal choices every morning. Then that's what we talk about. And then, you know, so I'll eventually grab, because then to me, it says they're not ready. They're not ready to start therapy. So I just let them go.
Okay. So we're going to take another break, and I want to talk about, when we come back, supports, like supports for people that are going through this, besides actually going to therapy, other things that can help people through the process. So we're going to take a break, and we'll come right back with Robin Hill.
Be Ready is the go-to for entrepreneurs looking to start or grow their businesses. With mentorship, coaching, marketing, and web design, Be Ready should be your first stop for resources and strategy. Learn more about Be Ready at www.bereadycle.com. That's www.bereadycle.com.
And we're back to the Black Girl in CLE podcast. I'm joined with Robin Hill, mental health therapist and owner of RC Consulting and Professional Development Services. And we have been talking about mental health today because May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And we've done a lot of talking about therapy, what is therapy. We talked about kind of this whole quarantine and what's happening, how that can be a trigger for some people. Would this be a traumatic experience or one of those moments that, like you said, they break the time?
Yeah. I think, yeah, it is. It's a collective trauma. It's affecting different people differently. Some people are like, I'm gonna just work, I'm gonna build, I'm gonna create a business, I'm gonna come out on top. You know, they're positive thinkers, they're self-motivators, and other people are barely getting dinner cooked. And so I wanna make sure that we don't look down on people who cannot function in the midst of this chaos. It is something we've never been through before. You watching the news, you don't know what's happening from day to day. They're learning this disease every day like we're learning it. So yes, it's definitely a traumatic thing, but not everyone's going to be impacted as badly as others.
Okay. So when we first got our stay-at-home orders, we were told like we could go for walks. Mm-hmm. And I had been told exercise and walks are really good pieces for mm-hmm. moods or therapy mm-hmm. or anything to support mental health. Is exercise is a good thing. Is that
yeah.
true?
It's very Should true. Yeah, it releases endorphins, definitely. You want your serotonin to be moving, and sometimes we're sitting in the house and the windows are closed, it's dark, that's not good. Oh, let some sunlight in, go for a walk. Eating releases endorphins too, which is why we're putting on this quarantine 20 or whatever they're calling it. So be careful with the eating. Take a walk instead would probably be a better choice.
Does the eating make a difference of the food? Like if I'm sitting here eating Oreo cookies all day, yeah, is that going to affect my mood differently than eating healthier?
Eventually, right. Eventually, eating period releases the endorphins. So you're going to feel good in a moment eating all the Oreos. And then you're going to feel bad later because you ate all the Oreos. So, you know, make wise choices. But that's why you see people, whenever there's a funeral, whenever there's something heavy, people bring food because it makes you feel better. But it's not necessarily the best choice when you're clogging your arteries or gaining weight, you got sugar issues, whatever. So yeah, a walk is better.
Okay. Does it have to be a walk? Is there a time? Like I was told it doesn't have to be like a 2-hour workout because the gyms are closed, but it could be something else.
Anything, you know, just going for a walk. I think just getting the sunlight, you know, we got to remember vitamin D is important as well for our mood. A lot of times we get vitamin D deficiency and depression at the same time. So just being outside in itself is going to be good for you, for your endorphins, but maybe just taking a 20-minute walk. It's not like measured like medicine, but definitely you'll feel better. You will feel better.
Okay. What are some other things people can do besides walking? I know there's people that have set up the check-in calls. Is that helpful just in general for mental health, or particularly just through the crisis here that we're going through?
I don't, yeah, the check-in cost, I am such, I'm an anti-phone person, so I don't, I might text someone in a minute, but I've had a couple people out of the blue call me, and, you know, my introvert is like, why are people calling me? But I answered, and it did feel good to have someone check on me and to talk for a minute. So I think the calls are good. I think any kind of activities that you can create in this time would be good. I know a lot of people are doing puzzles. People are trying to work out, you know, walking. You know, you just be careful, make sure you got your mask on because we don't know what's out there. I know some people want to go fishing and all that stuff. But yeah, any kind of activities, any kind of new routine that you can create during this time, because what's causing the sadness and the mood disruption is not just because of this unknown germ out there, which is a problem, but also we have, our routine was shaken up. And so now you're just sitting in the house and you don't have anything to do. So if you can create a new routine that gets you into an acceptance of where we are right now, and you can hopefully start to feel better.
I've seen some articles, and I don't know if you know anything, of like other supports. I know insurance for some people and pricing is a problem to getting help. Do you know of any like apps or supports for people that kind of want to take care of their mental health? But
yeah, there's a lot of apps out there. I don't know of any particular that I would recommend, but I know that there are mindfulness apps would probably be great because you need to stop your mind from wandering around what all is going on, learning how to focus. So a mindfulness app, if you find any of those, there are journaling apps now. Those are good because you want to get your feelings out in a productive way. My daughter had me download a workout app. Actually, it was not, and it was, and I was like, you can't kill me because, you know, I'm a little, you know, I'm a little heavier, and I got back problems. I'm a little older. So we found one that was for the older, not old, but, you know, just a little more moderate. And it's a daily workout regimen that takes less than a half an hour. And so that's good that we can do it from home. We don't need a bunch of equipment. And it gives you the accountability. The one she had even gave you like little nice pointers, encouraging little phrases every day. My daughter, you know, kids, our teens know everything. That's who you probably need to talk to about apps and stuff. She's got a drinking water app that will remind her throughout the day, drink some water. So there's so much out there. You just need to just look it up, Google, look in your download store and find those type of things for you.
Does drinking water help? I mean, I know it helps for exercise and those kind of things. Is that a good support of mental health?
I don't know about mental. I'm pretty sure staying hydrated is a good thing all around. I always tell people the mind, body, and the soul are all connected. So when you're not taking care of your body, you will find that you will have mental health and spiritual issues. If you're not taking care of your spiritual health, you're going to find yourself with physical and mental issues. And the same with the mental. So anytime that you're doing something like drinking water or anything healthy, you're going to feel the effects mentally and spiritually. It's going to be positive.
Okay. Well, I have one final question. I think it's one final, but it might lead to another line of questions. Okay. How can we as friends support other friends that we think might be in crisis or trauma? You know, I'm not going to just be like, girl, you need a therapist. Maybe.
Right.
That's right. Like, how do you bring that up? Or should we bring that up? Because, you know, there's a lot of us suffering in silence and we all know it. And we say those things, especially in the Black community, like, well, you know how she gets.
Yeah. I think sometimes we rush to always have the answers and don't just sit with people. And once you build that relationship and you're sitting with the person, then it opens up the opportunity to say, hey, well, you know, I know a good therapist. Maybe you want to talk to someone for various reasons. But because we don't always spend that time and just be in the presence of another person and hear what they're really going through, and then we just jump to say, you know what, you need to call a therapist. I got, you know, here, call this person. It feels judgy. It doesn't feel like it's coming from a genuine place. And I think we need to work on as a people group to just learn how to be with people so that we can help them.
And how can we support that process for people that are looking? So I've gotten people, and even after, like, when this airs, I'll get people saying, I heard the article, I saw what you wrote. Mm-hmm. I think I might want, like, can I have this conversation? Mm-hmm. How does someone like me or whomever provide that safe space for people to talk, to come to them with, like, you know, I think I might want to go to therapy if I am the friend receiving that.
That's a difficult question. again, just be available. I think letting people know that that is something that you support, so that they know that you, they can come to you with that. You know, you, as you can see with social media, there's opinions about everything out there. So if you let it be known that this is something that you're supporting and that you're for, then people will come to you and say, hey, you know, I remember you posted this one time, or I remember when you were doing your interview, you said this, and they'll come to you. Let people know that this is something that you, you're behind.
Okay. Would you say, I have a friend that will reach out to me, especially during this quarantine, and she'll say, hey, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how's your mental health? And, if, you know, at first it's just like, what's your number? I'm like, what's my number about what? My phone number? Like,
right.
But then when she did it, I found it helpful because it was a second to think, like, what is my mental health right now? How do I feel? Mm-hmm. Is that something that anyone can do? Or is it?
Yeah. I think sometimes you got to define it, because some people are going to say, what do you mean by mental health? You know, like, how do you feel about yourself today? Or how are you feeling today? How's your mood today? Sometimes I have clients who can't verbalize. I will bring out a emoticon sheet and just say, give me some feelings off the sheet to help them even identify. Because some people are that limited. They don't even identify emotions and feelings. But yeah, giving them a Likert scale of, you know, 1 to 10. How are you feeling today? Are you feeling good emotionally? Because if you say, are you feeling good? And most folks are going to say, yeah, I feel fine, because they don't have physical pain.
Right.
But how are you feeling emotionally? Are you okay? I think that does give people time to self-check. And, you know, maybe the first week they may struggle, but after they have that first marker of what okay is or what not okay is, then they know how to judge from there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what's the response if they're not fine? Are you to be the cheerleader, like, it's okay, girl, you're gonna be great today? Or should you just,
I would ask them that? So what are you doing about it? What are you, you know, do you need, because I can give you somebody to talk to if you need to, or do you need to talk? And see, that's the problem with the whole checking in people. Do you have time to sit and listen if you check in? Mm. Or you just want to just sound like you're just checking in, like, hey, how you doing today? You know how we do. Hey, how's it going? And we keep on walking. Yep. You know, do you have time for them to not be okay?
So I think part of this is, from what I'm hearing, is the approach of slowing down and actually being more meaningful with the connections. So there are people that I check in with daily before this happened. How's your day? What's on your scale? Are you, you know, like, I'm here all day for you.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But I think that's the thing that I've struggled with. We do those Likert scales. How are you feeling today? And they're like, sad face. And I want to be like, but you're so amazing. Don't be sad. And that might not help either.
Yeah. So to reframe that, you know, wow, it's instead of saying, don't be sad. We all have sad times. You know, you're so amazing. I would never even recognize that you had a sad moment. Tell me more about that. That's a different way to frame it, because you're acknowledging their greatness, you're cheering them, but also giving them an opportunity to express that even in your greatness, you're having a sad moment. Go ahead and tell me about it.
Okay. So within all this, as we go through this lockdown, and now people are getting back to work, and I personally think times are going to get a little scarier, because some folks that have been home are now being forced into work, or what about my kids, and more stresses. Mm-hmm. Plus summer's coming in, you know, here in Cleveland, we hit summer, we want to go outside and have a good time. Mm-hmm. So like, is that something to be able to do, is to check in people personally, social media wise? I've seen the memes, like, you know, like, what's level of Beyonce are you on today? And to me, that's kind of one of those Likert scales.
Right. I think I saw a Will Ferrell one. That one was hilarious. Yeah. I mean, it's, and I think we also have to, like I said, with the connection, I'm working on going to grab some chairs from Target from my backyard, going to get a small grill, because, you know, the restaurants is a little iffy. And even when they open them, I'm not feeling that, but I want to invite a few people. I'm not a big crowd person, but I'll invite a few people so that we can just have that time to connect and talk and woosah. And I think that we need to become more like that, where we're just going back to the old times when our parents used to have card parties or whatever, just having that small group connection. We do want to be careful to not feel like we have to save the world. There are a lot of resources out there. We have this podcast that's going to be for people to play. Allow people to have their own process without feeling like I need to check on everyone I know. I need to. Because basically, you may be depleting yourself. So be careful of that.
So within that, the check on everyone and not to deplete yourself, as we go forward in this, you know, I guess kind of the question is the final statement. How do people take care of themselves? Because self-care is another thing that people mm-hmm. drop that word. Like, I'm doing self-care, Netflix. Yeah. I'm doing yeah. self-care. I'm going to walk a marathon.
Right.
I'm just going to sit in the bathtub all day. And for mm-hmm. some other people, sitting in the bathtub all day might be a sign of depression.
Exactly. Sitting in a house watching Netflix all day might be a sign of depression. Self-maintenance is different than self-care. Self-care is, it should be goal-driven. It should be focused on bettering the self, helping the self. So sometimes it is a time to shut down and withdraw. Solitude is different from isolation. So, but it should be goal-driven. It should be, I need to take a break away from this so that I can get my energy up, or I need to rest. I haven't slept well. I'm going to sleep. I'm going to meditate because I haven't focused well. It should be very goal-driven. It shouldn't just be I'm being lazy and I'm calling it self-care.
Okay. If I'm having trouble unplugging, so I take off and I'm like, I'm going to unplug today because I just need to take unplug. And then day two, I'm going to unplug today. And then day three, I still need to feel like I unplugged. Am I... Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Or should I start being concerned? Like,
okay, so you're a very driven person. Here goes the coach hat back, you know, back on.
And
so
it's not
you're,
me.
Okay. So you're very, this hypothetical you is very driven. So what I would say is it needs to be measured so that you can feel like, okay, I took the time. I will take a break and unplug for this many hours at such and such time, I will get back to work. Because if you don't do that, your mind is going to be constantly thinking about what it is that you have to do. So that self-care moment has to be a part of the schedule so that you know that it comes to an end. I'm not going to lose ground. I'm coming back to my work at such and such time.
I'm going to wrap up, but I want to thank you for being on the show today. We'll probably circle back and check in with you if it's okay sometime mid-May, just because sure. I'm hoping people have questions, and I know just in general people reach out, and I know people are struggling, mm-hmm. and this is going to be a help for them. How can people like find you or learn more about you, you know, Instagram, website, whatever?
My website, robinhillservices.com. That's R-O-B-Y-N. HealServices.com. You can subscribe to my newsletter. You can, I don't know, I don't think I have the social media links up there, but definitely subscribe to my newsletter, and that keeps you to know of everything that's going on.
All right. Any final words for the folks concerning mental health to wrap this up or end on a good note?
It's okay to not feel okay. You just need to go and get some help. If it's not professional help, it's okay to talk to your friends, but if it's overwhelming, then I would suggest go get professional, but it's okay to not be okay.
Thank you. My guest today was Robin Hill, mental health therapist and owner of RC Hill Counseling and Professional Development Services. Thanks for listening, guys, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. Please check us out online at www.blackgirlincle.com. And like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at BlackGirlincle. This podcast was recorded in Cleveland, Ohio, with post-production by the talented interns at Black Girl Media. Copyright 2019, all rights reserved and retained by Black Girl Media, LLC. Talk to you next time.